Good morning.
Good morning.
It's Sunday morning, December 12th, 1999.
Hooray!
We are at the Absolute Monastery.
Hooray!
Celebrating our Sunday worship program.
Hooray!
Recognizing the divinity within each one of us. And our topic today is defining our objectives. Defining our objectives. As we define our objectives in life, we find life a lot easier to live. The difficulty that most of us have is we don't define our objectives. So let's take a moment and meditate on that idea as I lead you in a guided meditation. Within me is all knowledge, all wisdom. Within me is every desire that I could ever have, ever had, or ever will have. In me is this wonderful powerhouse of good. And I say to myself too often, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know how I'm going to get there. I don't know what the procedure is. And every time I say that, I don't know. Every time I say that, I shut the door to the inner awareness because I have told myself I don't know. The divine in me never intrudes on my life. The divine in me lets me do whatever I wish to do. It does not judge me. The divine in me is my perfect, pure self. As I listen to the divine in me with my whole heart, I hear ideas and concepts that are wonderful. I hear some dumb ideas and concepts too, because I have planted some dumb thoughts about myself from time to time. But I'm wise enough to know a dumb concept from a good one. And so if I feel that it's a dumb concept, I just let it pass by. And I listen to all the good ones. But listening is not enough. I listen and I act. I listen and I act. I listen and I do what the inner says for me to do. The inner says I'm whole and perfect, so I act in every way like I'm whole and perfect. I speak like I'm whole and perfect. I think like I'm whole and perfect. I express my body affairs like I'm whole and perfect, and I am whole and perfect. I think I'm an intelligent businessman doing my work in an honorable, desirable way. I know I am an intelligent businessman doing my work in a desirable, efficient way. I know that I am intelligent. I know that I do everything in its most beneficial way. I know I'm the creator of my world, and I create about me beautiful people who are just like myself, beautiful beings. I create about myself whatever it is I choose to create. If I create babies, I create babies. If I create young people, I create young people. If I create adults, I create adults. If I create nobody, or a few, then I create nobody or a few. It doesn't matter. All that matters is that I create what makes me happy. Now, I'm going to think about what my spiritual objectives are and empower them this day. That's all it is. Let's open our joy song books to our first joy song. and we don't know this one because we don't sing it very often. It's number one. God's love is deep within me, ever satisfying my soul. God's love is deep within me, ever satisfying my soul. God's love is deep within me, ever satisfying my soul. God's love is deep within me, ever satisfying my soul. These are affirmative ideas that put positive, dynamic thoughts into our mind. God's love is the only love we know about, the only thing that satisfies our soul. And why? Why is God's love the only thing that satisfies our soul? Because we are God. We are the allness of God right now. How do you achieve the objective of recognizing that you are God, Stefan?
I listen inside, and I listen to the thoughts and ideas that God inside of me showers me with every second, every moment of my life. And when I open that, and I open my ears, and then I open my mind to that inner flow, then I'm receptive and I'm tuned to that magic and to that intuitive creativity. And then it's only a matter of applying what I hear, and I express that objective of God.
Good start. Good start. Defining our spiritual objectives. And Stefan defined our spiritual objective of being God. And he defined it as listening within and following the wisdom that is fed to him from his inner self, his God self. This is not an easy thing to do because we haven't trained ourselves to do that. In 1 minute, Stefan defined the entire program that leads to spiritual objectivity and spiritual reality. But it takes a lifetime to carry it out. And the lifetime could be a snap, a snip, as some of you say. It could be just a snap, or it could be drudgery. Why is a lifetime a snap for some and drudgery for others? Lifetime is a snap for those who are childlike and innocent and listen within and follow it. It's a drudgery for those who think they know it all, who are sorry for themselves, who think that life didn't give them a fair deal. Somebody else got the silver spoon in their mouth and they didn't. Somebody else had the nice parents and they didn't. Somebody else had the good education and they didn't. Somebody else had the good brains and they didn't. You see, whenever you do that, it's a lifetime of drudgery. But when you, in your innocence, say, I am God, I'm all of God, and I express it now in everything, then your spiritual objective is clear as a bell. And that's the way we want our spiritual objectives to be, don't we? Clear as a bell. Let's turn to another page here in our Joy Song books. And let's sing on page 5, the first one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
God Unlimited Choir. Here we go. Ah, sweet mystery of life, at last I know thee. Ah, I know at last the secret is to be. Oh, the loving being, knowing who I am. The living hope, the joy that lives forevermore. For such is love, and love alone that knows its own being. And tis love, and love alone that e'er can be. Tis the answer, tis the being all of living. For it is God alone that rules for. Now, Sylvia, you think you can handle that song? Sinica, do you feel you can handle that song? Ellen, do you think you can have it? Stefan, do you think you can have it?
I can try.
All right. Stefan is going to apply his inner genius, listening to the divine within him, to sing in perfect harmony this lovely song, Ah, Sweet Mystery of Life.
Ah, sweet mystery of life, at last I know thee. Ah, I know at last the secret is to be. Ah, the loving being, knowing who I am. The living hope, the joy that lives forevermore. For tis love, and love alone that knows its own being. And tis love, and love alone that here can be. Tis the answer, tis the being of our living. For it is God alone that rules for us.
Thank you. Very nicely done. Sylvia, what is the mystery that keeps you from being aware of your objectives? And how are you working with that mystery so that it is no longer a mystery?
Well, it's more or less like Stefan said before. It's living and following it. The moment I follow what I hear, the mystery is really gone. I remember that when I heard that I wanted, when I heard very strongly from within that I wanted to go to that seminar of God Unlimited University of Healing over in Europe, I did everything that I could make it possible. And you can be sure it wasn't easy. And I didn't know why I wanted to go. I just knew I had to go. And once I was there, I heard from outside, from you, Dr. Bailey, who was giving the seminar, what my inner was ready to hear. So sometimes when I follow my inner, it's not that it reveals all the secrets to me just by listening. I follow an impulse and then I hear what I'm ready to hear from somebody in my world or from a book I am inclined to take in my hand and read or open at a certain page, or even turning on the television or the radio just at a certain point in life, and it tells me what my inner as a symbol wants to tell me. And to become aware of that is solving and being aware of the mystery of the divine within.
How can you do that? How can we each listen and solve the mystery within by hearing and acting upon it? Well, it takes a whole new set of parameters, a whole new set of objectives for ourselves, because we have listened and we say, isn't that beautiful music? Isn't that a beautiful statement? Oh, what a wonderful talk he gave. Oh, what wonderful ideas he shared with us. And then, do we follow it? Do we follow it? What do little children do? Little children see a movie and they instantly start singing the songs. We sing it too, but not like children do. We used to go to the movie every Saturday and on the way home from the movie, we'd sing these Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs songs, or we'd sing whatever were the songs in the movies, and we would just sing at the top of our lungs, bellowing them out into the cold of the winter nights or the warm of the summer evenings, whatever the case may have been. And we just had such a great time, and we'd walk this great distance, like 3 miles to the theater and back, because we wanted to save the money to have for popcorn rather than the bus fare. And we just had a lot of fun, and we sang and sang and sang, and by the time we got home, our voices were, we just had sung so lustily and so happily. But we were putting those thoughts in motion. We were putting those ideas in motion. We were putting them into our life and into our heart, and they became part of our web and warp, part of the thing that made us what we were. And every day, as we sang those songs, we sang, what other songs from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs? Remember? Remember the songs? Whistle while you work. Just sing a tune and sing a tune and whistle while you work. When the dwarfs would go to work, they would sing that song. And then, is that where that somewhere my love will come, when Snow White was singing about her handsome prince that would come one day to her? And there's many other songs that don't come to my mind at the moment, but they were the songs that were very current, and we would sing them until we went to the movie the next week and then saw another wonderful song show that was filled with beautiful ideas. But we would live them, and we'd be affirming them all week long. Can you see why during the Depression years in the United States, people would go to the movie, and they would see these movies of Shirley Temple's, all uplifting movies, the movies of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, movies of dancing and happiness and beautiful gowns and men in tuxedos, all dressed fine beyond what the average person would experience in their life, but vicariously they experienced it and they lived it. And all throughout America, people had the expectation of better days are coming. They had the expectation that this was only a momentary thing. This was not a downer that was going to keep us down. It was just a condition. And isn't it interesting? The wealth of the world didn't change. It was just the attitude of the people that changed about the wealth of the world. The whole world was poor at the same time, and the whole world was rich at the same time. But the attitudes of some people when they were poor was, this is it, let's die. The attitudes of others who were poor was, no, we can get on, we will achieve, we will accomplish whatever goals, whatever objectives we set for ourselves, let's go for it. And that's why Shirley Temple played the poor little rich girl. She is always taken on by some family that was opulently wealthy and with maids and butlers and things like that, and or with a ship captain where she made the ship interior look just like a fairy castle. Nothing was ever down. It was always glorious. And this is what we do when we establish our objectives in a harmonious way for ourselves. And we can do that. And we can have lots of fun doing it too. All right, let's take another one of our joy songs and see how it fits into this wonderful idea of our own inner awareness. This is another one of Stefan's favorite songs here on page 9. And so we'll ask Stefan to sing that for us first, and then we'll sing it afterwards. How about that, Stefan? You ready?
Teach the world to sing.
That's right.
I've now built the world a home and furnished it with love. Grow apple trees and honey bees and snow white turtle doves. That's the song I share with the world today. A song of peace that echoes on and never goes away. I am the voice of God singing in perfect harmony.
I like to hold it in my arms and keep it company. That's the song I share with the world today. A song of peace that echoes on and never goes away.
Together. I now see the world at peace, all standing hand in hand, and hear it echo through the hills, this peace throughout the land. That's the song that I share with the world today, a song of peace that echoes on and never goes away. You see, when we are really considering these things, we're considering the idea that I've now built the world a home and furnished it with love. Now, what is this world that you built? What is this home that you built for the world? What does the home look like? Siddhika, how would you define the world that we build and we're furnishing it with love? How would you define a home that would be like that?
A good home furnished with love is a home within myself, which I choose to furnish with my love and my choice. And if I look up to the sky and see clouds and sun, it's my choice if I want to see the clouds or if I want to see the sun. And let sun in or let the clouds have some influence on my being, on my attitude towards myself, towards the weather, towards life at all. And I think it's actually a very nice idea, it's furnishing my home. It gives me such a freedom of doing what I want and fill my home, my inner self with, it's actually, I couldn't say it's a feeling because it's already filled, but it's more an awareness of how it is filled, like an awareness of the clouds and the sun. It's not that I have to organize the sun or organize the clouds, they are there. It's my vision, how I see it, what I want to perceive of what I see. And I can see in everything within my furnished home the beauty and put my awareness on that happiness and right action and abundance and all these good words we know. And I think that's glorious furnished from within, and I only have to see it, recognize it, and appreciate it, and live in it.
Beautiful. Now, what has Siddhika said to us? She said to us, I have now built the world, me, my world, who I am. I have now built the world a home and furnished it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow-white turtle doves. That's a song that I share with the world today. A song of peace that echoes on and never goes away. Now, Siddhika, in your own way, sing that first verse in the chorus for us.
I've now built a world at home and furnished it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow-white turtle doves. That's the song I share with the world today. A song of peace that echoes on, never goes away.
And the other verses, please.
I am the voice of God singing in perfect harmony. I like to hold it in my arms and keep it company. That's the song I share with the world today. A song of peace that echoes on and never goes away. I now see the world at peace, all standing hand in hand. And hear the earth go through the notice peace throughout the land. That's the song I share with the world today. A song of peace that a thought on and never comes away.
When we think these things, and we realize the power of these things, our whole life has changed. We create the world. We furnish the world. We empower the world to be whatever it is we want it to be. There's nothing more to it than that. We are the ones who are setting the pattern for our life. We are the ones who are defining our objectives. We are the ones who are making decisions of what's important in our life and what direction we want to go. And now, Ellen is going to give us a very surprise performance of page 10, I believe it's here, 10, the first song, I Believe.
I believe for every drop of rain that falls, flowers grow. I believe that somewhere in the darkest night, a candle glows. I believe for everyone who goes astray, God within shows the way. I believe, I believe. I believe above the storm, the God within is all reserved. My indwelling being is my real self. This is the world. Every time I hear you completely cry, you touch a leaf, oh, it's the sky. And I know why, I believe.
Now let's join Ellen. Let's join Ellen and the whole works here together and put our own vibrations into it along with Ellen's, who did it so beautifully for us. Together? I believe for every drop of rain that falls, flowers grow. I believe that somewhere in the darkest night, a candle glows. I believe for everyone who goes astray, God within shows the way. I believe. I believe, above the storm that God within is always heard. My indwelling being is my real self. This is the verb. Every time I hear a newborn baby cry, or touch a leaf, or see the sky, then I know why. Believing is a very difficult thing to do. We think it's easy to say, I believe this and I believe that and I believe the other thing. If I were to say to Stefan, Stefan, what color is this table in front of me? He'll say, well, basically it's brown. He wouldn't say, I believe it's brown. He wouldn't say, it is brown, because parts of it are tan, and parts of it are metal, and parts of it are different reflections of color. But you see, when he speaks with one-minded, one thing, Herb, will you bring me that brown table in front of you? I know exactly what he says. He's saying, bring me this brown table that's in front of me. If he would say, Herb, bring me that tan table that's in front of you, or that light-colored table, he'd mean this table beside me here. He wouldn't mean the table in front of me. You see, we have all sorts of things that establish our belief structures. When you believe everything you look at is pure and beautiful and good, then everything you look at is pure and beautiful and good. what is your objective? What is your objective? Now let's just take that simple thought that I mentioned to you. Stefan wants the table that's in front of me. He could say, Herb, bring me the table that's in front of you. And I just turned around and I'm facing a different table. Now, he wouldn't say that, would he? Because, you see, that would not be definitive enough. He would say, Herb, bring me the brown table that's in front of you. Well, I might think that this table here is brown. I might say if that's a table is brown. And I might say this is brown. And I might say if this is brown. Or that is brown. We have a lot of brown tables here, don't we? Mm-hmm. So, he has to be specific. He could say, Herb, bring me the TV table that's in front of you. What table is that? Anyone? That's this one. This is not a TV table. It could be. This is not a TV table. It could be too. This is what's called a TV table that we put our TV dinner on and we watch the TV and have dinner in front of the TV with a TV table or a snack table or something else. He would like to have this table brought to him. Herb, you're making a lot out of nothing. Much ado about nothing, in fact. What is all this talk about a table and Stefan wanting this table? Stefan really doesn't care whether he gets that table or not. That's not even part of the question. Well, if Stefan did want this table, the more specific that Stefan was, the more definitely he would get the table. If Stefan says to me over the telephone, Herb, I believe there's a table in front of you, and I'd like to have that table brought into my office. And I would say, okay, Stefan, I will do that. So I take the coffee table and put it in his office. Now, that's not what he meant. Or I bring any other table and put it in his office. That's not what he meant. The more specific he can be, the more definite. When our objectives are clear and specific, the results are clear and specific in our life. Here, Ellen was singing for us, I Believe, and we all joined her. And she said, I believe for every drop of rain that falls, flowers grow. That's rather definite, isn't it? Those things happen that way. I believe that somewhere in the darkest night a candle glows. Well, just now it might be an incandescent bulb, lamp, but a candle glows. I believe for everyone who goes astray, God within shows the way. Well, God within is always showing the way, no matter what one's problems were. I believe above the storm that God within is always heard. This is important, because the divine within us is always heard, even when we're not listening, even when we're not paying attention. The divine, we know, not because we believe, but we know these things. My indwelling being is my real self. This is the Word. That's who we really are, who our indwelling self is. Every time I hear a newborn baby cry or touch a leaf or see the sky, then I know why I believe. Because we have put causes in motion and we have brought wonderful results into our life. They're fantastic. Concluding our sharing time here, we're going to have Sylvia sing for us. We're going to take the most difficult piece of music that we have here, the most complex information like how great I am or born free or peace in my spirit. But instead, we'll stay on page 10 there and we'll just let her sing the second song there for us. Okay, Sylvia, you ready for that?
Now I am only perfection, and I'm perfect in every way. Each time I look in the mirror, I see only God in me. To know me is to love me. I know I am God, God I am. To know me is to love me. I know I am God, God I am. God, I am God, God, I am.
Who is Sylvia? Anybody?
God.
Thank you. Why were you so reluctant to say that? Because she couldn't find the song?
There were two more lines.
The thing is, I told you I gave you the most difficult song in the book.
Yes,
but
you spoke your words.
You see what can happen when we change our belief structures even in the slightest way? When we change our belief structures even in the slightest way, we mess ourselves up. When we define our objectives, we know who and what we are, we know where we're going, and we know how we're doing it. Now, I defined Sylvia's objective for her humorously, but really not so humorously. I said, I'm giving you the most difficult song in the entire book to sing. And I rattled her brain with a few titles, and then I finally gave her the song. Now, the song that I gave her is probably one of our favorites, one of our very most favorites, easiest to sing, most joyous to sing, and lots of fun. But because I preluded it with a difficult attitude, with non-belief, it became a difficult song. Can you see how important it is when anyone asks you anything, you say, no sweat, no problem, easy then. And then you go and you read the book on how to do it or whatever, and you do it. I told you the story about me being on board ship and the cat always turning to me to have things done because he knew I could do anything. And he'd say, Barley, go make this. And so I would take his thing, his drawing and his idea, and I'd take it down to the woodwork shop or the metal shop, whichever it called for, and I'd begin working down there. And as I worked in the woodwork shop, I would work a little bit clumsy. And I'm not clumsy at all, but I'd work a little bit clumsy. And so these woodworking specialists who worked in the woodworking shop said, Barley, don't you know your right hand from your left? What are you doing there? Well, the captain said I should come down to the woodworking shop and make this for him. No way! We're not going to let the captain have something you make here in the woodwork shop and think that it's from us. No way! And so, we're going to make it. And so, they stopped everything. It happened every time. They stopped everything and made it. Beautiful. And they made it even more beautiful. They rounded the edges. They smoothed it. They sanded it and made it so perfect. My goodness, you know, nothing could be more perfect. And then, to top it all off, they put an undercoat on it, which I hadn't planned to do at all, and they put a varnish or a lacquer on it so that it would look just wow. And so I took it to the captain after it dried, and with a reasonable length of time. I took it to my bunk first, and I just stuck it under the bunk for a while because I'm not going to go up there that quick. He'll think, you know, I had help or something. And so then I went up there after about an hour or two, and I talked to the captain. I said, it's the best I can do. And he said, it's the best you can do. It's wonderful, fantastic. Barley, I know I can always depend on you to do anything I ask you to do. You're fantastic. And thank you, sir. And I backed out quickly because, you know, false praise. But it wasn't false. Did I deserve that praise? Did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Did I create that being done perfectly for the captain?
Yes.
If I had worked with my hands sanding it and preparing it and making this special board that he wanted up in his office to list the names of all the officers when they came and went. Did I do that? Did I help with the design? Did I create the woodwork shop for me to do this in? Did I create all of the little angels who wanted to come to my rescue so I didn't do something stupid with the captain having it represent the woodwork shop? You bet. I went into the metal shop one day. I had to make another thing for the captain. And it was some sort of a box that he wanted. And I thought, okay, well, I'll go down there. So I said to the guys in the metal shop, I said, now, I have to make this box. Now, should I make it out of aluminum and use aluminum welding to make it together? Or should I make it out of iron? Or should I make it out of tin? Or what should I make it out of? What kind of metal? And they said, what are you going to do with it? You know? And I said, well, it's for the captain. It's going to be sitting on his table, and he's going to keep things in it, you know, that he wants to have. And for the captain? And I said, yeah. Well, I would make it out of this aluminum, so it's fairly light, and use the aluminum welding and all that sort of stuff, and I'd do it like this and that. And I'd say, okay, where's your aluminum? And they'd tell me. So I'd start cutting it. What are you doing? Don't you know how to run that snipper? Don't you know how to run the cutter? Give that here. And so then they cut it. And then I'd take the welder, and I'd, you don't start welding until first you buff down the edges and you take away the rough edges. You know, you don't. I knew that, of course. But they realized that they wanted to do it perfect. So immediately they came over, and they all stopped doing what they were doing in the metal shop, too, because this is for the captain, very, very special. And they said, the captain's going to know it came from the metal shop, and we don't want anything coming out of here that's not good. And so they all worked on it. Each one took a side of the box, and they buffed down the edges, and they buffed down the surfaces. And then they did the aluminum welding together of it, and they made it so perfect. The beading was just beautiful. It was just like a ribbon of aluminum instead of tick-tick-tick-tick-tick, you know, little jerky aluminum like it oftentimes is. And they made it so gorgeous. And then they topped it all off. They took their aluminum buffer wheel, and they buffed it down so that it sparkled like it was just brand new aluminum. So beautiful. And then they put a lacquer over the top of that so that the buff would remain, so that the shine would remain in the salt air and the other things that were around. It would protect it from that, inside and out. And then they put it in a little oven they had, which dried it like a lacquer finish, like the Chinese would put on their things to make it dry so perfect and so hard and so permanent. Well, it was about 2 or 3 hours. By the time I went back to the captain with it, I didn't go back until after supper, but I went up to the captain's office with it, and he looked at it and says, where did you find that? You know, that looks like something that was made in Japan, made in China. It's beautiful. And I said, well, we made it for you. He says, you certainly did. You are fabulous. I can always depend on you. Now, you see, we have these opportunities to stand up and be counted. It's not a matter that we do things ourselves. It's a matter that we do things ourselves. We take it out and have it done properly. When a man buys his wife a beautiful watch and engraves on the inside of the watch, my eternal love, to marry from your husband, John. My eternal love. Does he take an engraver's needle and go on the back of the watch and clumsily make an effort to make it? It'd probably be much more precious to her if he did that. But he doesn't. He takes it into a jeweler. And he has the jeweler do it. But it was his thought. And he has it done beautifully. He brings it to his wife, and his wife cries and cries and cries and cries and cries. And he says, well, what are you crying about, you know? She says, I'm so happy. You know, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever had in my life. It's so wonderful. He says, well, what about me? Well, you're beautiful too, but this is different, you know. So, you see, we can do anything. And we do anything. We can go anywhere. We can accomplish anything we want if we are willing to set our objectives up. If we don't define our objectives, we can't reach our objectives. My objective for the captain was to make that wood sign gadget where you could turn the lever to show where the officers in or out. And it was beautifully done. I think we got a hold of the ship's draftsman to draft the words on there, you know, like the officer's name and then in and out and that sort of thing. It was just really fantastic. It's colorful, beautiful, yet very subtle and very professional. You see, it's not a matter of saying you can't do it or you can't do it. You just don't do it. And when your heart lends yourself to something, you can accomplish it with such imagination, with such genius, you never realize it's possible you could do that. But go to any objective you have, whatever that objective. Why did I create the captain asking me, an 18-year-old kid, to do these things? Why did I create the captain thinking that I can do anything?
Because you had self-confidence.
Because I believed in myself. I had self-confidence. Now, here I was just 18 years old. And everybody else basically was 18 years old too, except for the officers who were a little older. We were all just a young punk crew on this dispensable, disposable aircraft carrier that went out into the kamikaze waters without escort, without anything else, to lure them away from the main part of the fleet. And we were just supposed to, you know, be expendable. But we weren't. That wasn't my choice. And we continued to do our work, and we never had to really do anything terrible, but we continued to do our work, and it was wonderful. But I put the cause in motion to accomplish what I wanted to accomplish. Well, you're Herb, you can do that. You can do that. You can do all those things. You're wonderful. And, you know, we're just human beings. Well, I am too. But I'm acting like a divine being. And you're human, and you can act like a divine being. And you can live like a divine being. And you can express like a divine. You can listen to the divine within you. And you can hear the music of the divine within you, how it speaks to you, how it sings to you, how it rings in your ears and says, listen to me. I'm wonderful. I love you. I'm fantastic. I'm glorious. I'm good. And you too can go down to the woodworking shop or the metal shop on behalf of the captain who is the divine within you, asking you to do different things. And you go and do it. You go and do it. There are many times that I can do things easily. It's no problem at all. But I'll say, Greg, will you help me with this? And he comes over and he helps me with this because he thinks that I'm too stupid that I can't do it. He doesn't realize that I'm giving him an opportunity to express his divine self. And we put together a cabinet the other day, a file cabinet, Stefan and I. And Stefan put the screws in, he put all the things in, he made them perfect, and we adjusted the drawer just perfectly so it would float perfectly. And when we got done, we had a masterpiece. It was a simple masterpiece, but it worked perfectly. Because that's Stefan's nature. I knew that if I screwed the thing together, it would work fine. But I knew also that if Stefan screwed the thing together, it would work perfectly fine. And I wanted it to be perfectly fine. So, was it that I couldn't do it perfectly fine myself? I could. I could take the time to do it perfectly fine. But I chose to have Stefan, who always does everything perfectly fine. And it made it a pleasure to work with somebody else too. You see, when your objectives are clear, I wanted to have that cabinet put together because it had to fit in a very certain place and do a very certain job, which subsequently it didn't do, but it could have. And I could have easily finished it and made it to fit in that place, but I had other alternatives. See, my objective changed. Objectives changed. Sometimes all those things that we want so badly in the beginning, we want no longer. Consider this little idea. How many times have you had an objective? You wanted to have a new purse, or a new dress, or a new suit of clothes, or you wanted a new wallet, or a new camera, or a new car, anything. And you went for it tooth and tong until you got it. And then you got that new camera. And what's the first thing you did with the new camera? You set it on the shelf. And then you went on an outing where you would have liked to take pictures, but you forgot the camera because out of sight, out of mind. you left the camera there and you didn't take it. And your friends say, hey, I thought you just bought a new camera. This would be a great time to take pictures. Where is it? It's back home on the shelf. Thanks a lot. You see, my point here is not the new camera so much, but it's that we have to have these things. We have to have these. Our objective is to have these things at all cost. It doesn't matter that it costs three, four, five times as much as a simple little thing. You go to the drugstore and you buy a little camera. It's in a little box. And it takes 20 pictures, and when you're done, you throw it away. You don't repeat the thing. You just take the whole thing, hand it in to the development people, and they make the pictures out of it. Well, what is there to focus on? It's always set at 50th of a second, at 100, and therefore all the pictures come in perfect focus. The pictures that are near and the pictures that are far. Of course, a close-up of a flower, it wouldn't do that. And maybe a close-up of a portrait of a face, very close. But give yourself a few more feet and it'll do fine. It'll focus beautifully. But we have to have these big, expensive cameras because we want to put on the show that we have a big, expensive camera. And the people who have these little incidental cameras, they whip them out and shoot their pictures, and when they go home, they've got all these nice pictures. You, taking your focus and organizing it and making sure your flash is up and making sure the people are all standing in the right place, you go home with one or two pictures. And even those are not perfect because they could be. They could be perfect. They could be more finely defined. They could be more finely focused. They could be more finely taken so that the exposure were exactly right to the thing you were taking. But you see, this is the problem. What is our objective? Is our objective to have nice pictures, or is our objective to have the greatest professional picture that we could possibly take? Well, I'm not a professional photographer, you say to yourself. But I can't do professional pictures because I'm not a professional photographer. But, you see, our objective is forgotten. We forget we want to just take pleasant pictures. Now, when we have the digital camera takes them on the floppy disk. Those are not top-grade professional pictures. They're good. But top-grade professional pictures, you still take film. You might have a higher grade digital camera you could use, but you see, what is your objective? Is your objective to have pictures for the gist? I heard Stefan make a comment the other day which I thought was very, very significant. We were looking at pictures of us that we had taken in front of the motorhome. And as Stefan was looking at the picture, someone says, well, it's a little fuzzy, it's a little this, it's a little that. And Stefan says, in the gist, you won't even notice it. Now, why did he say in the gist, you won't notice it? Because the resolution that the gist prints in is not as high as the resolution on a photographic paper, right? Yes. Photographic paper gives you 5,000 screen line, you might say. And in the gist, you get maybe somewhere between 60 dots per square inch to 120 dots per square inch, something like that. And it's not the 1,000 dots per square inch like you would get on another type of thing. You see, what's your objective? When we forget our objective, we go spending all sorts of money for high-quality equipment that we will never utilize. And also, that high-quality equipment that we'll never utilize is something that we will probably never take with us half the time because it's too valuable to take out and have in that sort of circumstance. So what are we doing? What are we doing? We are creating ourselves a bunch of unrealistic, unrealized objectives, aren't we? And our topic today is defining our objectives. And it's important for us to define our objectives. How are you going to define your objectives? What are your real objectives in life? Be honest with yourself. When the captain said, Byerly, you can do anything, of course. I went out and did it. I had no idea how it was going to come out. I had no idea who was going to be helpful or not. I had no idea whether I was going to be doing my last job for the captain, because I did it myself. But I did it. I went out and I just did my best, and it was fulfilled in every perfect way. You go out and do your best on whatever your objectives are in life. If your objective is to walk the spiritual path, then be yourself and have fun. Be true to yourself. Like yourself. Get your big, fat, droopy, snoopy nose out of other people's business. Your business is in here, not out here. Because what's out here is what you are inside here. So clean up your act and get your objectives properly posted in your own inner library, your own inner calendar. It's important. I was thinking, I have some of these little boards you write on, you know, as this pencil you can erase, and I'm going to hang one up down at the swimming pool. And then we'll write on there what time different people use the pond. And then all you have to do is look, and you'll remember it. And then other people who are visiting for a day or two will know when there are openings, and they too can go and enjoy it. But you see, my objective is not to have a written in stone thing. In fact, it's going to be very easily erased. It's going to be with those pencils that you can erase and can be changed and rearranged. And it's just like the judge at the service that you had the other day. He said, obey the laws of the land. Obey the laws of the land. If for any reason the laws are not proper or not beneficial, then change them. But obey them until they're changed. So we'll have a sign up there with your names on. Cooperate with them until you change it. But there's nothing that can't be changed. They can always be rearranged. Our objectives are constantly being rearranged. Decide what your objectives are. What your objectives are for walking your spiritual path, for being yourself, for having fun. Define those objectives and then go for them. But when you define them and go for them, remember, you're going to be surprised. Because the guys in the woodworking shop are going to want to say, hey, what comes out of here is perfect. Let us help you. No charge. In the metal shop, hey, we are a very sophisticated group here. We're even tougher than wood. What comes out of here is posh. And they made so. And what comes out of your heart is the purest, most wonderful, most dynamic, most beloved feeling the world has ever known. And that's all that matters. So define your objectives and follow them and live them and have the time of your life. I am God, God I am. 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 Ellen, will you give us a benediction?
All right. We have had a very uplifting church ceremony this morning with discussion about our objectives to fulfill our spiritual life. And as we are going home and take these words each one of us has shared with us, let's think about our objectives and know that we are each are the creators of our world, that we each are God, and we have that power, that indwelling power, which we can use every moment and use it in a positive, uplifting way
seeking our affirmation and say, I am God, I am that power, I use that power to accomplish everything in my life in a wonderful, perfect, loving way. And so these are our objectives today, which we carry on our spiritual journey, and which bless us and all our beloved. And so it is.